Something coming faster than any of us can imagine and will change our lives in the most dramatic ways is AI.
And while AI used to sound freaky to me and just something that was going to take over my world, it really would have revolutionized my practice had I stuck around. Many of you know, I got so burnt out from charting. It was the big reason I left medicine because I was frustrated with the EMRs, the clunkiness, and the amount of time it took to learn them. Not only that, but not being able to sit and connect with a patient and look them in the eye, like one-on-one while you're actually interacting with them, the whole reason we went into medicine, not to do paperwork.
Yeah, so that's why May and I have started working with Lindy.ai, which is fascinating. They help you produce the most efficient notes, fully customizable, which is different than some other AI products, so you can do what you do best, which is see patients and let the artificial intelligence scribe do the dirty work for you.
Yeah, not only do you get the perfect patient notes the way you want, written in any format, for whatever specialty you're in, and maybe you're in ophthalmology or vet medicine, it will also create the note, scribe and send the patient follow-up instructions, referral letters, consultation notes. It's amazing. Lindy is offering our listeners a 7-day trial to experience the difference of their AI medical scribe. Go sign up at lindy.ai/bsfree to get started. That is Lindy, lindy.ai/bsfree.
Finally, a source of raw, real, and honest information on healthcare issues that matter most. Welcome to BS Free MD. From the latest medical information to how to stay sane as a doctor or a patient, no subject is taboo, no BS is allowed. Now, let's welcome your hosts, Drs. May and Tim Hindmarsh.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of BS Free MD with your hosts, Drs. May and Tim Hindmarsh. We're both two practicing physicians. Well, I'm sort of semi-retired now, but we have many decades, 3 decades or more of experience for each of us. And around here, we talk about everything that matters, from faith, family, fun, fitness, and of course, everything else in medicine served up with honest conversations, we hope, no BS. And today we're getting into a topic that touches on both finances and family stuff, which is life insurance. Today we have with us as our guest, Jamie Fleischner, an expert in the field. She's joining us to demystify insurance and discuss the best time to start planning for your future. It's a really important topic. A lot of people just think it can sound, I don't know, blasé, but really so important. Jamie began her journey in the insurance industry in 1993 while still in college, and driven by her personal experience that highlighted the critical importance of disability and life insurance. And rising through the ranks with her passion and expertise, she founded Set for Life Insurance in 1999, focusing on individual life, disability, and long-term care insurance. Really important. As we start living longer. So with a plethora of accolades under her belt and a commitment to personalized client-focused service, Jamie is positioned Set for Life as a leader in the insurance field, dedicated to finding the best products for her clients at the best rate. So grab your favorite beverage, get comfy or not, or whatever. Let's go. Here's Jamie. And thanks for being on the show to share all about insurance and demystify all the confusion and see how it can be fun.
Great. Thank you for having me.
So let's, if you don't mind, share with our audience so they get to know a little bit about sort of you and your background. Can tell us, how did you get interested in the insurance industry? Was it something you thought was cool in high school, or was there any fun background on this?
I know, because a lot of people don't think about life insurance when they're growing up or in their 20s, but I actually grew up in the life insurance business. So my father was in the business, and he would bring home old applications, and I would play business person as a little kid. I'd go to his office and I'd work. When I got to high school, I was involved in a business club. It was a competition club, and I did the life insurance category. So I always kind of knew about it, and we'd have discussions at the dinner table about it. So it was something that I was always sort of aware of. I went off to college, had no idea what I wanted to do, but always knew I wanted to have my own business. And I did an internship and everything just clicked. I really love talking to people and getting to the nitty gritty about what their biggest fears are, what's most important to them, and being able to help them. So if something really tragic happens, I'm one of the first people that they call. I'm actually able to provide a solution. And I just love that. So that's sort of the history of it. I try to make it more interesting and fun because it can be a really drab and morbid subject. So I try to make it a little bit more of a fun experience going through the process.
Well, you know, it's a drab and morbid subject until you need it. And then it's a catastrophe if you don't have it. I mean, I've walked this path with some friends and it's just like, you're kidding. Like you had no insurance at all, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to believe because it's such, we came to the life insurance world ourselves personally by reading David Chilton's book, The Wealthy Barber. I'm not sure if you're familiar with
it. Absolutely.
It's just an absolute treatise on personal finance. Like really everyone should read it. Everyone should read it when they're like 15 years old. And then they should read it again every 4 or 5 years because the principles are so great. And it kind of blew my mind because I never really thought of this, that insurance is this critical piece to a financial plan. If you're not adequately insured, both from the life insurance perspective and disability insurance, especially at the beginning of your career when you're young and very insurable, you're really potentially putting yourself and more importantly, your family behind the financial eight ball.
Exactly. And people insure all kinds of things. I'm sure everybody has Apple Care on their phones and they insure their house. There's only one type of risk. There's 100% chance it's going to happen. We're all going to die. We just don't know when. And so it's the only kind of insurance that we know there is a risk. It will happen. It's just a matter, is it going to happen when you least expect it or when your family is still vulnerable?
So of the three kind of major types, you know, life, disability, and then maybe long-term care, let's start with like life insurance, for instance. Take us down the path of like, when do you start talking to people about it? Is it something they should do when they're in college or just getting out of college, graduating, you know, in their careers while they're young and healthy? Or do you wait for, we didn't really think about it till kids because it's like, we're both income earners unless we have dependents or a big pile of debt. So I'll just stop there and say, well, what do you tell people when you start thinking about life insurance and what it's kind of the key things to think about?
So whenever I talk to people about insurance, I think about it in the fact of what do you need in the foreseeable future? Because nobody really knows necessarily 5, 10, 15 years down the line what their health is going to be like, what their family situation, their personal life is going to be like. And so each type of those insurances are important depending on your individual situation. So disability insurance is important if you're reliant on your own income. If you become sick or injured and you can't produce an income and you still need it to pay your bills, to pay your loans, pay your mortgage, you need to make sure your own individual income is covered. Life insurance becomes important when someone else is relying on your income. So if you're single and you're in college and something happens to you, it's sad, it's tragic. Your family probably has to pay for a funeral, but you probably weren't supporting somebody else financially. So you didn't have those obligations. Even if you graduate and you're, you know, maybe starting out in medical school or in residency and you have student loans, most of those go away at death unless they're private loans. So even then, you don't really need to have the life insurance. Life insurance becomes dependent when you have a partner, you have a mortgage, you have a spouse, you have a child, where if you die and someone is at a loss, it replaces that income stream. So that's really when it becomes important.
How often, just because you brought it up, and this is kind of taking a little bunny trail, but how often are there private loans like that where family members, next of kin, parents, I guess, are responsible for those debts?
I think it's really rare. I would say less than 5% of the time. I don't know the exact statistic, but it's a really small number of loans that are private.
And that's check the fine print in anything you're signing so that you know what you're on.
Now, if you're buying a practice, like I work with a lot of people, they're buying a practice. Maybe they're a dentist or they're buying a practice. Oftentimes they require you to insure that loan because the bank says, if you die, we want our money. So that becomes another time when it's really important. So again, when someone else is reliant on your income, that's when you need to insure it.
Right, right. And that actually goes for business partners as well. I mean, you know, speaking to physicians, there's physicians in small group practice partnerships, you know, where you would literally have a life insurance policy potentially on your partner. So if something happened to that income stream, it won't sink the business for every other partner. We had a sad case of that in Oregon where there's these two wildly successful LASIK surgeons and they had, I think, a $3 or $4 million policy on each other. And then the one guy took a hit out on the other guy. Unsuccessfully.
In those situations, oftentimes there's also what's called a buy-sell agreement. So let's say you have like a couple of partners in a practice, you buy insurance policies on each other and then you get a document that's written up by an attorney. So if something does happen, you can buy each other out. Because if you don't set it up properly, you might end up in business with your deceased partner's spouse because they would by law have ability to run the practice. If they're not an MD or something, then all of a sudden they might be calling the shots and it could be a huge mess. Yeah. So if you are in a practice and especially if there's multiple partners, it's really important to make sure it's not only insured, but you also have the proper documents set up properly.
Okay. So let's say I'm finished my career, you know, my training, and I am out in the world and I'm looking at getting some life insurance because I'm married, my spouse is staying at home and we're about to have a child. What kind of things do I look at and what are the options?
So the primary type of insurance that I generally recommend is term insurance. You get the most possible insurance at the least cost. So there's two main things that you want to look for. Number one is how much do you need? And number two is how long do you need it? So in the scenario that you described, you're just in the beginning phases of your family. And so typically you want to have the insurance in force until you've paid off all your loans and you can self-insure. So until you've accumulated enough assets or until your youngest kid is hopefully off the payroll, which is about age 25. Hopefully. So in that case, that's hopeful.
So 45.
But so typically, again, in that scenario, I usually recommend like a 30-year term. And what that means is the rate is fixed for 30 years. At the end of those 30 years, it expires. Now, obviously, things can change over time and you monitor it. Let's say 3 years later, you end up having triplets and all these things change. You can always add to it. But you can't extend a term life policy. You also can't increase it. So when you buy it, it's fixed. So in that scenario, I always say go a little bit longer than you think, meaning don't get a 20-year term because in 20 years, your oldest child will be 20 and you might have kids that are still in high school. You're really vulnerable. Those are expensive years. So go with a 30-year. You can always drop the policy if you need to. Then the other part of that equation is figuring out how much do you need to have. In simplistic terms, people usually get 10 to 12 times their income. If you're the beginning of your career and you're maybe still in residency and you're not at your full income potential, then you want to also look at what's the income potential, but you can also look at it as something happens to you, how much needs to be replaced. Each million provides the family about $4,000 a month of income. So if something happens to you and you say, my family needs $10,000 a month, you really need about a $2.5 million policy, 30-year term. So that's about how we do it. And then what we do is we shop around and we spreadsheet it. We look at all the available companies and generally recommend go with the one that's going to be the least expensive. Now, if you have health problems or there's other kinds of circumstances, sometimes we'll recommend a specific company based on that. But for most people, if you're healthy in that kind of case, they usually get, you know, like a $3 million 30-year term, put it in place, and then again, evaluate every couple years.
And then that, obviously, that 10 to 12 times takes into account inflation over the time because what you start off, say what you're making.
You're essentially not touching that principle.
Right.
At least you're not touching that principle. For instance, tell me if I'm not tracking correctly, but if, so let's say you're 35 years old, you're reasonably inexpensive to insure, you get $3 million worth of life insurance. So you're going to be able to cash flow about $12,000 a month at a low rate of return. So, and then not touch that principal. And then when you reach retirement age, you still have at least that principal left to retire on.
Correct. Reality is if you died, you know, when you're 37 years old and your beneficiaries get it over time, like you're saying with inflation, initially maybe you need $12,000 a month, but then that creeps up. So eventually you probably have to start drawing out of that principal. So
you're adequately insured, you have such a long period of time before you really have to start knocking any significant amount of money out of that principal. Hopefully it's earning enough that it keeps up with inflation.
I mean, that's really correct.
And I was thinking the opposite in terms of your, say you purchase your insurance and you're 30 years old for a 30-year term, and then it's, you suggest based on your income at this time, a $3 million policy. We'll say you die when you're 50, so you're 20 years into it. Now that $3 million doesn't go quite as far as it did.
Yeah, but you're
20
50.
Years before.
You've also had 20 years to accumulate wealth and pay down debt.
Yes.
I mean, so now your kids are, you know, maybe in their 20s. And so hopefully again, then, and maybe your mortgage is worth less and your retirement account is worth more. So as time goes on, your need does somewhat shrink, but again, with inflation. So that's why it's important to reevaluate, because a lot of times people do, they start out with 3 million, 30-year term, and then a couple years later, things change. You can always buy some more. You might say, okay, gosh, you know, things are different than we thought. You can get more. You just have to apply at that time, and it's going to be a little more expensive because you'll be a little older.
Got it.
Yeah. So it's kind of a moving target. It's not an exact science.
So on that note, it got me thinking, which I love, is that you can always buy more. You can't increase that policy. Let's talk a little bit about, this is the new thing that I hear all the time about laddering life insurance. Instead of, you know, you can get sort of multiple ones that, you know, that are different values based on different terms. Is that very common? And when do you recommend that? Or can you explain laddering life insurance?
So basically, laddering is, let's say you needed the $3 million. But instead of getting a $3 million 30-year term, you get a $1 million 10-year term, a $1 million 20-year term, a $1 million 30-year term. And the assumption is in 10 years, I've accumulated $1 million of assets or paid down debt. I don't need that as much. And then in 20 years, 30 years. I personally am not a big fan of that. And the reason being is that's assuming absolutely you're going to accumulate $1 million in 10 years. Well, what if you don't? And now you've lost that. And now you're life insurance is only $2 million. And again, 10 years from now, $2 million will feel like less. So you've lost the value. You don't save a lot of money by laddering it that way. I mean, maybe instead of paying $120 a month, you're paying $90, $100. Maybe you'll save a little bit. I prefer getting more than you think you need, like a $3 million 30. You can always cut back your policy if you wanted to. So in 10 years, you can reduce your policy from a $3 million to a $2 million. That rarely happens because most people say, gosh, it's not worth what it once was. So I'm not as big of a fan of the laddering as a lot of other producers are.
Yeah. Interesting. So they do that basically to try to cut costs, thinking, right. But you're right. Yeah, usually what happens is that it would be easy to, you know, if you're exponentially wealthy and you can self-insure, then you can just cancel.
Right. But it's so cost effective as a financial vehicle to protect your family. If you're young and healthy, that it's such a complete no-brainer. Like to try to, you know, nibble at the edges of this to try to save 25 or 30 bucks a month, even over the entire term of 30 years, just seems completely insane to me.
I think so too. And then 10 years from now, you're probably not going to be healthier than you are now. So if you needed, if that $1 million expires and now you're, instead of 30, now you're 40 and now you're on, you know, heart medicine or you were diagnosed with a blood disorder, can't replace it that easily. So again, I always just kind of get a little more than you need for a little longer than you need it. It's easy to trim it, but if it expires, you know, you can, and like you mentioned, it's not that expensive to get a term policy. It's really not. So you don't need to cut the corners. You're better off having it instead of letting it expire.
So can you, so I have an avocation problem. So Can you get into a little bit of that? Like, can you get a, because I have a sky, I haven't skydived in a few years, but I did for 10 years. I have a license. I have hundreds of skydives and, you know, motorcycles and like all of these things. Are there riders that you can say your life insurance counts, except it doesn't count if you, you know, drive into a bridge abutment racing a car?
No, there are no exclusions on a life insurance policy. So in those circumstances, they will rate you or charge you extra. And it depends on what they ask for. So like I'm in Colorado, they don't ask about skiing, which is kind of silly because that's a big cause of deaths and disabilities. So when you buy your policy, they're going to ask you, have you done any of the following in the last 3 years? So again, that's another reason a lot of times people are in residency and they're like, gosh, I've been busy. I haven't been able to scuba dive or skydive or do any of these things. I'm going to get my policy. Once you have your policy, if you want to take up any of those avocations, go right ahead. You want to learn how to fly a plane or jump out of planes? All of that's going to be covered. The only thing that is excluded from a life insurance policy, and it's state by state, are suicide clauses. So for instance, the state of Missouri, zero suicide clauses. If you buy your policy and kill yourself the next day, you're paid. Colorado here, it's a 1 year. And then most states are 1 year or 2 year. After that, even that is covered. So they don't exclude on life insurance. But if you buy your policy and you've been doing a lot of these avocations, they might charge extra. They're going to ask a questionnaire and ask a lot of questions. Let's say you do a lot of motor vehicle, you know, types of things, and they put an extra premium on that. And then a couple years later, you're like, you know, I got kids now. I don't ride my motorcycle anymore. You can request for them to remove that extra rating as well. Hmm. You just have to go through the process again and answer the questions. But that's also a possibility.
No, that's really important, because that's exactly what I did. I started skydiving about 6 months after I upped my term policy, you know, 20 some years ago. But yeah, no, it's a really good point, because there's lots of our physician colleagues are into all sorts of action sports, and it's like, you know, the assumption is I'm uninsurable or it's going to be way too much money. And the answer is, well, no. But it gets back to, I think, to this, the actual, you know, one of the greatest pillars in financial planning is start early. Uh-huh. Get this stuff early. You know you're going to have a family and you're really insurable now and you're coming out of residency and all you've done is live in a hospital for the last 6 years, get your financial house in order now. It's going to be it's the cheapest time to do it. It just makes the most sense. So let's move into the next realm,
I'm thinking even later in life. What happens if you're older? You gotten remarried. You've got this pile of debt. Yeah, I don't know. Something's happened, and it's like, oh, my previous policy I bought was not long enough. What are the options available for, say, if you're 50 year old and you want to? It's like, crap, I really need some life insurance.
You can still buy policies. You absolutely can. They're just going to charge you more. So everything's based on where you are at the time of application. I have people who are 50 that are really healthy, and I have people who are 30 who aren't. So they're just going to look at you individually. So obviously, it's going to be more expensive if you're a healthy 50-year-old versus a healthy 30-year-old. But again, life circumstances change. And so if you need it, then you go and get more.
Yeah, that makes sense. So The next question is disability insurance, because I think that is the absolute elephant in the room for a lot of my junior colleagues. I've talked to them. I'm like, dude, you have to get disability insurance. You know, you have a really super good income. You have a family. You know, you're under 40 years old. This is the no-brainer time to do it. You have a way higher chance of actually collecting on this than life insurance. You know, most healthy physicians will make it through to the point where they're self-insured, you know, potentially financially independent, that kind of thing. But disability insurance, that always, I mean,
I think we doctors confess, think they're invincible.
We were woefully under disability insured because we assumed that our group would just take care of us, our group insurance. And then
each other would take care of us.
Well, that was the thing, each other. Because if I was disabled, May would, you know, just work more. And I always picked side jobs I could do from a wheelchair. Because I was that kind of guy. But plus I also had hobbies that would potentially render me paralyzed. But disability insurance, again, is something that can be very reasonably purchased and really decrease risk as far as, you know, your life financial plan.
Yeah. So disability insurance, and especially when it comes to the underwriting, like you mentioned, disability insurance underwriting is much more complicated than life insurance. So because there's so many, like you mentioned, the chances of you becoming disabled, becoming sick or injured, and you can't work during your working years is much greater than your chances of dying during your working years. So that's why, and they look at everything. So the younger you are, the better off you are when you purchase your policy. If you're in medical training or in residency or fellowship, there's also extra discounts. That's the time to get it. So chances are you will be reliant on your own income. No doubt about it, unless you're fabulously wealthy or you marry somebody that's fabulously wealthy, which is, again, pretty rare. So almost all physicians during training really ought to get their own disability policy, because once they have that policy and they have those discounts, it's portable. It can go throughout their career. Most people don't stay at one place their entire career, and you can't rely on your group benefits to take care of everything. Group benefits are really intended to be more for rank and file employees, not for high income employees. So the higher your income, the less it's going to replace. So it's really important to get your own policy.
That's a really important point, because we didn't know that. We just hear, oh, the group has disability insurance, box ticks, you know, without really thinking about.
Right. But then it's not own occupation. So it's like, well, we expect you to work at Walmart as a greeter, even though you were a neurosurgeon.
Right. So can you explain that, as well as the importance of when you're getting your own disability insurance, like the, own occupation. I mean, a lot of people don't know.
When you get your own individual policy, it's going to be more comprehensive, because they're going to look at you and ask you the medical questions. So they can individually select. They can say, you're healthy, this person's not healthy, so they can underwrite it and have more control who's in the risk pool. As a result, they can offer more comprehensive coverage. And like you mentioned, the most important part of the disability policy is the definition of disability. If you don't have a good definition of disability, the policy's worthless. That's how they determine whether or not they're even going to pay your claim. So an own occupation policy says if you're sick or injured and you can't work in your occupation, which is also your specialty or even your subspecialty, you're going to get paid, even if you can work in another specialty or another occupation. So you mentioned a neurosurgeon. I had a client who was a neurosurgeon. Early in his career, he developed an eye condition, which he became partially blind. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want a partially blind neurosurgeon working on me. So he was no longer able to be a neurosurgeon. He was able to go back. He filed a claim, got paid full benefits. He's still on claim. He's now in his 50s. Retrained and did psychiatry. He did research. He did psychiatry. He has a full practice, doing fantastically well. He's still collecting benefits because of the time of claim. He can't be a neurosurgeon. So that's really important. That's the most. So if you only know one thing about a disability policy, is own occupation and get it early.
Yeah. See, that's really interesting, because you know, you said two things that are in a way kind of divergent. So if you're the go-getter that's 100% focused on career, doesn't have a partner, never had kids, et cetera, et cetera, and now you're going to be, you know, this neurosurgeon, orthopedic surgeon, you know, high wage earner, high intensity job, you may need no life insurance, but you may need really bulletproof disability insurance. And again, like, why we didn't get this in residency, it blows my mind, because this is literally, you know, basement foundational financial planning stuff. And I've talked to some of my young colleagues, and they're like, I can't afford it. I can't do that. And I go, dude, you can't afford not to.
Right.
And there's ways that you could have it be more affordable. Like some of the companies have, you know, escalating premiums, so it's less expensive initially and the premiums go up. You can also trim the policy, maybe not have as many bells and whistles. It's just important to have the policy and to be able to increase it in the future. So you get your policy. You can even get a small policy during residency for $50 a month and then adapt and change it as your career goes on. It's just important to have it, have something.
So compared to life insurance, how does disability insurance sort of fluctuate as you get older? Say, for instance, I'm thinking if someone starts off in a career and then switches careers, say in their mid-years and goes back to school and becomes a neurosurgeon later in life. Early on, their disability policy might be smaller because, say, they were doing some job from, I don't know, nursing, you're a PA, a secretary, and their disability insurance policy is less. So, say, when they finish and they're 40, and now, say, you are a neurosurgeon, high income earning person, professional with Nike Corps, whatever, and I'm trying to think of an example where it's easy to get disabled and not be able to do your job. That I'm thinking more in terms of, you're right, neurosurgery. Is it that much more expensive later in life? Like how you, because you can't overinsure yourself. Correct?
No, you can't overinsure yourself.
Well, that's what I mean. You can.
So everything again is based on where you are at the time of application. So I was working with somebody this week who was a non-traditional medical resident. They started later in life. They're in their 40s. They're finishing their residency. They already have kids. They're married. And they haven't bought their policy yet. They can still get a policy, but we might structure a little bit differently. Like maybe we don't put a cost of living rider on the policy, or maybe we might structure a little bit differently to keep it more affordable, but they still need to have the policy. So as long as you're reliant on that income, you need to have that insured. Now, on the other end of that is, well, when is it time to get rid of the policy? So if maybe, you know, sometimes people say, I'm never going to practice anymore. I'm going to stay home with my kids and I'm not working. You don't need to necessarily have your policy. If it's temporary, if you're going to stay home for maybe a year or two and then go back, you can continue paying the premiums on that policy. If something happens and you're totally disabled, they're going to pay. And I did have this happen. I had a client of mine. She was a pediatrician. She had one kid, worked part-time after the second kid, stayed home, developed cancer, and she wasn't able to, she had to hire people to come in and help with the kids. Since she had been paying all those premiums, even though she wasn't earning an income, she was still able to file a claim. So it still was able to be beneficial and helpful. Now, I've been doing this for 30 years. So I have a lot of clients that are now in their 50s, 60s, and they're transitioning out. And so when we get to that point, sometimes we don't just drop the policy. Sometimes now we reduce the policy. Maybe we change it to a 5-year benefit. Maybe we trim it. Maybe we don't need as much benefit anymore. The kids are out of the house. Now all we have is just a little bit. So once you're at a point where you're just working for fun and you are able to be financially independent, you don't necessarily need the policy anymore. But before you drop the policy, we have a discussion because maybe you've had a pretty significant change in health. Maybe you're jumping out of airplanes. Maybe you're doing high risk stuff and say, gosh, my back is really hurting. I might need to file a claim. So before you drop it, you want to take all of those things into consideration.
So our avocations, I would assume avocations are a big deal in disability policies.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, if you're skiing 100 days a year, your chances of being disabled are completely different than someone that quilts for fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've had a lot of claims with skiing and cycling. But we've had a lot of claims on both of those. And they don't ask about either of those on the application. Now, when you do apply, I tell people, don't offer information to an insurance company.
Right.
Don't tell them, gosh, you know, I always wanted to jump out of airplane. You don't need to tell them that. Just
don't ask, don't tell. That's right. Exactly. They don't ask, don't tell. So this is interesting. Let's talk about that a little bit as far as what you see, like the common things. So skiing, a bike accident, what other common things? You know, you think skydiving, but that's probably the lowest risk activity.
The cycling thing drives me.
Life insurance problem.
You're right.
No, but
I had 3 life insurance claims for scuba diving. I've had 3 different clients die scuba diving. I will never do that. It scares me.
Wow.
It's the most relaxing sport in the world. You're just in a gigantic earthen womb, but that's besides the point. Yeah. So the thing that's so amazing to me, it's so funny how actuarials look at risk. When I started skydiving, the place I had skydived at, in 30 years, they had 3 fatalities. One I witnessed, it was pilot error. 2 were suicides, actually.
Oh, wow.
So it was incredibly safe, and they had hundreds of thousands of skydives. In that same 6-week period that I had started, they killed 6 cyclists in Portland.
Wow.
But that didn't hit the news like the skydiving.
But it's just this weird perception. I think it was 6. It was mm-hmm. some ridiculous number because, you know, it's like everyone needs to cycle because it's good for your health. Well, it's good for your health until you abruptly are stopped by a semi. Then it's
you bump into something and your body shatters and you can't work. So I've seen a lot of that too.
Which is interesting.
Is there like in hobbies and etc. on the side, what are the more common things that they look at or that tend to take people out in disability?
So when you apply, there's different kinds of underwriting. So when you apply for life insurance, they categorize you. You're super preferred, preferred, select, you know, they categorize you based on your health. So you're very healthy, kind of, sort of, and that's how they price you. But they don't exclude anything. Disability insurance, they either say, yes, we'll cover you, no, we won't, or we're going to exclude. So if you're doing a lot of rock climbing, again, I'm in Colorado, I have a lot of clients here who rock climb.
Good point.
We might exclude rock climbing. They usually don't add premium. they just exclude that specific thing. Now, when you do apply, the most common types of exclusions, though, are medical exclusions. So when you apply, they ask you medical history, head to toe, last 10 years. I would say the most common types of exclusions on the policy, number one is mental health. You have psychological. So if you're taking medicine for ADHD, depression, anxiety, any of those things, they will exclude all psychological illnesses. That's probably the number one thing that gets excluded. Wow. Number two, back and neck and muscular skeletal. Those are really common types of exclusions. If they do exclude your back, it's really important that you work, again, it's important to work with an experienced broker, but I always make sure they have language in there that says except fracture. Because if somebody has a pre-existing problem with their back, you know, they have back aches or whatever, if they get into a car accident and they break their back or they jump out of an airplane and break their back, that's not related to their pre-existing condition. So you want to make sure it says except for fracture and burns. So make sure that those things are covered. So those are the most common exclusions in a disability policy.
Yeah, that's really, really good information.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, yeah, so again, get this one is get it early. You know, just like investing. Start our son. I saw him leave my wife's body. I can't believe he's our kid sometimes. This kid started investing when he was like 17 years old. He goes, the longer you do it, the more it compounds. I'm like, whose kid are you?
So, he's right.
Yeah, he's 100% right.
He should have got some life insurance before he's got his pilot's license, though. He didn't plan that right, did he?
Yeah, well, he has no dependents, so it doesn't matter. But it's interesting because that's exactly right. Even if it's a little bit a month, you start investing early. You start protecting your assets when it's cheaper. It's never going to be cheaper to get disability insurance than when you're young, healthy, and don't have any, you know, bad habits.
And what I like to tell people is your largest asset is your ability to earn that income.
Yeah.
So if you were to actually calculate what over the course of your career you're going to earn, it's in the tens of millions of dollars.
Yes.
If you were to go buy a $10 million house, they wouldn't even allow you to get the house without insuring it.
No.
So the thought that people are walking around having an asset worth tens of millions of dollars and it's not properly insured is, and there's a relatively significant chance that something could happen that you can't earn the income. It's mind-boggling. So
it's totally the truth, but people think that, like, no big deal to, you're right, insure your house, your car, their jewelry, but them, when it comes to themselves and the potential to earn that income, people don't put it together.
It's even more ironic in medicine because we see all the crappy things that happen to people. It's like, you know, holy cow, this guy was out for dinner with his wife and he was 39 years old and had a massive aortic aneurysm and died. You know, and it's just like we see all this stuff, but still somehow it's not going to happen to me. No, it is going to happen to you. That's the point.
There's something self-protective about that saying, it's never going to happen to me or I'm never going to die. Well, yes, I've got news.
Yeah.
That's Dave Asprey. Yes.
Depending on your faith.
It will happen. I don't know when.
Depending on your faith. That's
I had somebody ask me this just yesterday, all the time. People say, what happens at the end of my 30-year term if I didn't die? And I say, well, congratulations, you're alive. You didn't die. Well, can I get my money back? Well, no. Like, do you get your money back if your house didn't burn down last year? No, it's the insurance. I think they might be confusing it. There are types of insurance that are permanent, so it accumulates cash and, you know, and that sort of thing. But it's a good thing if you didn't need your insurance. You had the peace of mind. You knew going to bed at night, if you didn't wake up, your family's okay. So that's worth something.
It's a fundamental misunderstanding of what insurance is.
Yeah.
Insurance is a financial vehicle to protect you from a catastrophic loss. That's all it is. And so why do you pay for it? And is because most of us aren't rich enough to have a gigantic pool of money that if there's a disaster, we can take care of it ourselves. So we spread the risk out by buying insurance and giving that money to insurance companies that reinvest it and make a bunch of money and hold the giant pool for everyone. And it's just risk allocation. But all investing is risk allocation.
It's actually just leverage. And so that actually leads me to the other type of insurance that we didn't talk about, which is long-term care. So as you transition out of your working years, a lot of times what I tell people is as you taper off your disability, it's important to cover yourself with a long-term care. because that's protecting your retirement savings. That's protecting your kids' inheritance. So even though you've accumulated a ton of money, again, chances are about 1 in 3 that you're going to need to have some kind of care at some point during your retirement years. Do you want that to come out of your retirement, or do you want to leverage that and then have it paid for through an insurance company? That's really all you're doing. You're just setting the risk elsewhere so you can offset it instead of depleting all of your life savings.
When do you buy that?
Let's talk about that.
When can you buy that?
Because we've heard horror stories about people trying to do that and how expensive it was when they were looking at it in their 50s.
The problem with long-term care is the industry is still settling how much they need to charge. And the population is aging, and you can't lock in your rate. So life insurance disability, when you buy your policy, it's locked in, it's guaranteed. So you know what you're going to be paying. The problem with long-term care is you buy a policy that they have the right to keep increasing the rates, and they probably will. So if you buy your policy in your 50s, you're going to be paying for this for 30 years, and it's just going to go up and up and up. So I generally recommend, again, late 50s, early 60s is kind of that sweet spot where it's not going to be too expensive to initially get it. You're still relatively healthy where you can get the policy. You don't want to wait until you're 75 or 80. It's going to be way too expensive, and you might already have significant health issues by then. So that's about the time. So again, as you transition out of working, transition out of your disability, then you move those dollars towards a long-term care policy.
So how does one, I guess, is it obviously individual? It's going to be looking at your health history, maybe your family health history in planning if you're going to need long-term care insurance. Obviously, your financial assets, how much you have. I guess I'm thinking, how is there any kind of tips on how you decide if it's worth it versus not, other than, you know, are you wealthy enough to pay for all your medical care or long-term care yourself? You know, if you have a massive family history of dementia and it looks like, I'm going to need it. It's pretty
obvious. That's got to be I mean, because that's long-term care for potentially a really long time.
Yes. Yeah. So what long-term care does, so what long-term care does is it says if you're unable to perform at least 2 activities of daily living, you know, dressing or transferring out of bed, or dementia or Alzheimer's just triggers it, you don't have to have any loss of activities of daily living. And then it will pay you a monthly benefit or a daily benefit, depending on how you set it up. And it usually pays you, depends on how long you want it, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. Most people do, the average amount of time people are on claim is about 3.5 years. So I generally recommend a 5-year policy. Okay. And again, you don't need to cover the whole amount. Depends on how much you've accumulated, how much you want to insure. It's a cost benefit, just like anything else. How much do I want to self-insure? How much do I want my kids to have to pay, or do I want to insure all of it? What's it going to be worth? It's the only kind of insurance, though. If you do have a business, you can deduct the premiums and the benefits are still tax-free. So if you are still in, you know, your 50s, 60s, and you're still working, you can also pay it. There are still some policies where you can do like a 10 pay or a single pay, pay it through the business, get the tax deduction, and then down the road when you need it, it is tax-free.
Interesting point.
No, that is great information, because I'm just sucking this up like a 58 and a half year old sponge, because I'm like, you know, we're kind of done with the other insurance. Thank goodness. You know, we've managed to reach that precipice for the most part. But the long-term care stuff, I've seen absolute horror stories, you know, where people had done well, they had done really, you know, reasonably well, you know, then they get really sick, and then their spouse gets really sick, and then they have to sell the house, and then they have to liquidate assets, and then they can't give any assets to their kid because they're going to have to go on Medicaid, and then Medicaid claws back, you know, 5 years of transfer payments to your children. And it just becomes...
And it isn't your fear, like, what kind of place your kids are going to place you? Like, choosing the nursing home for you? I always joke, I'm like, better be nice to my kids. They're going to be choosing, you know, our nursing home. So
absolutely. There's a consideration. So protect your assets, protect yourself so that you're...
Well, and the other thing is, I've actually had some kids pool together their assets, and they pay the premiums for their parents because they look at it going, this is protecting our inheritance. So if something happens to mom and dad, we want to make sure that they're taken care of. And I've had that quite often, actually.
That's a very good point. Actually, no, I've been.
Well, your son's been investing all these years, so he can, you know, pay
at some
point. But that's actually a really good point, because you don't think of it, people don't think and do the math that way, that, right, if there is a big inheritance, instead of just doing it that way, it is more cost effective to do the long-term care.
And they can split it. Yeah. So they can split it, because otherwise sometimes they're on the hook for it, or how is that all going to work? And so that's something. And again, these are the types of things you also might want to work with an estate planning attorney and have all of this in writing. So that way, if something does happen, especially if there's a dementia or things like that, you want it all in writing and written down.
Yeah, that's another really good point. We really love our estate planning attorney. Find a good estate planning attorney. It's not very expensive. You can update. You're going to need to update. You know, if you start with a will when you get married or when you start having a family, you're going to have to update it several times during your lifespan. And it's unbelievable how much damage you can do with poor planning. Poor planning.
And I that's another thing going back to the life insurance. I see a lot of people, they're so excited. They have a baby and they name the baby as beneficiary. Well, guess what? The baby can't receive the proceeds till their age of majority, till they're 18. So again, work with an estate planning attorney. You can name each other, you know, spouses or partners as beneficiary. But if there's a contingent beneficiary, maybe you need to set up a trust. Maybe you need to have directives. It's really important that that's taken care of. And the other thing is, a lot of people, they get their first job, they sign up for benefits at work, they name their parents as beneficiary in their life insurance, they later get married and they forget about it. If something happens, their parents are getting the proceeds. If their parents give it to them, that's a taxable event. So it's really important to stay on top of the beneficiaries and make sure everything is clean.
Yeah, it's amazing. I have a good friend who's a tax attorney, and some of the stories, he works with some very high net worth individuals, and some of the stories of these people that have worked their entire life, have made tens of millions of dollars, they get remarried, you know, they hate the stepson, and then they have to like rewrite these wills, but they're rewriting a will and the guy has like 3 months left to live because he has terminal cancer. It's like, dude, how do you do that? Like,
or the new stepmom comes in and, you know, the guy has dementia and, you know, she's in charge, and things can get real ugly.
I want it divided amongst all my kids, except the one that's the drug addict. He gets nothing. And it's just like, wow.
That's tough. How often do you work work in conjunction with like financial planners or estate planning attorneys, or do you basically just kind of put the ball back in your client's court to kind of sort it out that way? I'd say
it kind of depends. So it depends on the situation. Sometimes I recommend somebody go and work with an estate planning attorney, especially if they're just having kids and it's really important that they do that. So I recommend it. Sometimes the estate planning attorneys or the financial planners contact me and say, my client needs some life insurance, and we work in conjunction. And sometimes we have to contact the attorney I just send them the beneficiary forms. They want it all set up properly. I think it's especially important in certain like non-traditional types of settings, like maybe it's a same-sex marriage, maybe somebody has a special needs child. Sometimes those types of situations can become more complicated, and it's even more important to have the proper planning.
Really good points.
This is great.
Anything tips else that we've kind of missed that you want to, I really like what you say about the same sex marriage, special needs kids, things like that, that people don't until you're in that situation.
Well, and laws are different in different states for different, you know, it's like some people are in a same sex relationship, but don't want to get married, but they still want their partner to be able to, you know,
and you need to have medical power of attorney.
Absolutely.
That's really important. I mean, when my kids went off to college, I made sure we had medical power of attorney. I know people who learned that the hard way. Their kids were in a hospital away at college and parents didn't know about it, and they weren't able to make any kind of decisions for them. So it's really important to make sure you have all of these things in place. And I do agree, you want to make sure you work with an estate planning attorney that's local. And don't just download something on the internet. That you need an actual person who can help you. It's not that expensive, but get the right advice. But yeah, the laws are different in California or Florida than they are here in Colorado. If you move or change states, it's good to just check in and make sure everything is set up properly.
Great advice. These two doctors here on this end of the podcast didn't even think about power of attorney for our kids when they went to college. But you're right. I remember I had to call once when they were 18 plus 2 days for some medical thing. And that was it. I was like, cut off. Sorry, your child's 18. I can't tell you anything. And I'm like, oh, but I work with you. Literally work with you.
People don't think about it.
No, you're right.
It's really important.
Yeah, but
and it's also important too. Like when my kids turn 18, we had them go and meet with our estate planning attorney and they made their own medical directives. Like my sons, they named each other as, which I was kind of surprised. I thought they would just name the parents, but you know, that was their decision. They're adults. So they need to be able to start making their own decisions too.
No, that power of attorney going off to college is just that, that is just a brilliant idea. It's so simple to do. It's almost free. And exactly. Like, cause kids go off to college and never do anything dumb that would render them in a hospital.
Never.
Like not possible. So, you know,
yes, we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. We have just crossed that. Well, in May, we'll have crossed that bridge and both kids will have successfully graduated and have been off of the payroll. So that is kind of exciting. Yeah, you're welcome. Yes. So where can people find you? I assume that you can take care of folks all over the country.
Yeah, we're in all 50 states. We've worked with people all over the country. Best way to reach me is just on our website, setforlifeinsurance.com. It's SETFORLIFE insurance.com. We have a request a quote. We have contact information. We have a Calendly link. Also, if people already have insurance in place and they just don't know if it was set up the right way or they just want another opinion, I'm happy to look at it too. I don't generally recommend replacing things unless it's really in the client's best interest. And one last thing is I do work as an independent broker. So I don't work for any insurance companies. I work on behalf of my clients. So when my clients do come to me, I shop it around. And so what I might recommend for one person might be completely different even from their spouse or their colleague because everybody's situation and their criteria is different. So it's really important to have somebody independent looking at everything and providing advice.
Yeah, this has just been great. You know, some of these financial episodes we've done, it's like, well, you know, it's just money. Kind of an important thing, actually, when you think of it. You spend a lot of time earning it and a lot of time spending it, and there never seems to be enough. And so,
and insurance is the kind of thing that you need to have before things happen. I mean, a lot of people, you know, they're diagnosed with something and they contact me and they want to get insurance. It's too late. It's, you know, the whole, people always talk about you can't smell fire and go out and buy insurance. It's too late. You got to get everything set up before things happen. And some things may never happen and some things will. So it's really important to just be prepared, plan ahead. Even if it's not fun to talk about, even if it's uncomfortable to talk about, it's vital to take care of.
Absolutely. Do it early. And I was going to say it's like voting in Chicago. Vote early, vote often. No. Do it early before you're disabled or are sick. And talk to somebody like Jamie that actually knows what they're doing and cares about what's in your best financial interest and not just selling policies. So thank you so much, Jamie. Yeah. This was incredibly informative. We will probably be talking to you later about our own potential long-term care issues.
Anytime. Feel free to reach out if there's anything that comes up. I'm happy to help you. And thank you for having me today. I really enjoyed it.
It's no secret that medicine is a bit, uptight. That's why Tim and I created BS Free MD, to mix things up a little and have fun in the process. Besides, we are having these exact same discussions all the time, so we thought we might as well invite everyone to the party. If you really like us, you can get plenty more and maybe see one of Tim's cool tattoos on our Instagram or Facebook pages at BS Free MD. See you next time.
But we try to keep BS Free MD as raw and real as possible. We can't be held responsible for any medical decisions or discussions had as a result of what you've heard on the show. We know, bummer. But the truth is, we really do care about your questions. So feel free to reach out to us by email at doc@bsfreemd.com.